back in. Irene is right there. So what we're going to do, we're going to jump and we're going to take item number 14, which is an informational item on the status of waste discharge requirements of cleanup and abatement orders and integration of TM Dale implementation for Elk River and Freshwater Creek. It's all yours, ladies.
Hi. Good afternoon, Board Chair Noren, members of the board. My name is Joelle Geppert. I'm a water resource engineer in the Timber and Non-Point Source Division. Today, I'll be giving you a presentation on the status of waste discharge requirements, cleanup orders, and integration of the TMDL implementation in Elk River and Freshwater. Is that too loud? Also, with presenting with me is Adona White. She is a water resource engineer in the planning.
Joelle, may I interrupt you for one moment,
yes,
please? If anybody's going to speak to this item, can you please put in a speaker card? Just so we have it. Thank you.
Right. We are giving this presentation today from Mark Alpert, who is unable to attend. The purpose of this information item is to update the regional board and the public on the various Elk River and Freshwater WDRs, cleanup orders, what has been done today, and what is planned in the near future. In a collaborative process between Timber, Non-Point Source staff, and Basin Planning Unit, staff initiating the evaluation of the various programs with the intent of integrating management measures into TMDL implementation via revised orders. The TMDLs are under development. Adona gave you a presentation in March on the status of the Elk River Sediment TMDL, and you'll hear from her at the end of this presentation on an updated schedule. We will also briefly discuss restoration strategies and opportunities. To begin, we'd like to discuss an overview of the approach we will be taking, the Regional Water Board approach to recovery of beneficial uses of water and abatement of nuisance flooding conditions in Elk River and Freshwater integrates three main components. First, the TMDL identifies the management and natural sediment sources, loading capacity, and load allocations. The loading capacity is how much sediment the system can handle while still achieving water quality objectives, beneficial use protection, and prevention of nuisance flooding conditions. In conjunction, watershed permits are the mechanism to control and track management-related sediment source loads with effluent limits designed to ensure the loading capacity is not over-allocated. This component is currently comprised of WDRs to permit land disturbance and control new sources, and cleanup orders to control threatened and ongoing discharges. Thirdly, to achieve the maximum benefit from reduced sediment loads, restoration actions are likely necessary to hasten recovery of channel capacity and ecosystem function. So the proposed strategy to integrate these components is through a team approach, utilizing the skills and resources of Timber staff and Basin Planning TMDL staff. Together, these staff are going to conduct a comprehensive review of the WDRs, cleanup orders, and integrate results of the TMDL that translate into specific management measures into revised permits. While staff are conducting an internal audit of these various orders, we will work collaboratively with residents, landowners, and other stakeholders to incorporate the various concerns as feasible while ensuring attainment of water quality objectives. Recognizing that prevention and minimization of sediment sources and management of peak flows is likely insufficient to address cumulative impacts and impaired beneficial uses where timber operations are occurring, restoration activities will likely be necessary, and as appropriate and feasible, Regional Water Board staff will encourage and assist in the collaboration of these efforts. So to begin with a little bit of background, beginning in 2004, the Regional Water Board issued a cleanup and abatement order in the South Fork and Main Stem of Elk River to address existing and threatened sediment discharges. In 2006, similar orders were issued for the Freshwater and North Fork Elk River watersheds. And also in 2006, waste discharge requirements were issued in Elk River and Freshwater. These orders all started off on Pacific Lumber Company properties. In 2008, the Humboldt Railroad Company acquired the Palco Timberlands, and subsequently these orders were transferred to HRC, who has continued to conduct timber operations and sediment reduction activities. WDR was also developed in 2006 on Green Diamond Resource Company land holdings in the South Fork Elk River. To put things in a bit of perspective here, Elk River and Freshwater are two of five watersheds that in 1997 were found to be cumulatively impacted by sediment, with timber harvesting a contributing factor. The five watersheds are Elk River, Freshwater, and Bear, Stitz, and Jordan down here in the Eel River drainage. Because the sediment impacts on Humboldt Redwood Company, those timberlands are managed 75% of that watershed. There has been a focus on those particular timberlands. And the board recognized that the forest practice rules and the habitat conservation plan weren't fully adequate to address the cumulative impacts. Just as a point of interest, this board adopted the Bear Creek WDR last year, and staff are continuing to work with HRC on permits for Stitz and Jordan. So moving on to Elk River, faintly as it is, I think we're all fairly familiar with Elk River. This upper watershed here is the North Fork and South Fork. These are primarily managed by industrial timberlands by Humboldt Redwood Company and Green Diamond, predominantly over here. Sorry, it's McLeod Creek here. And public lands, the Headwaters Forest Reserve, managed by the Bureau of Land Management. These are the orders in Elk River, which I briefly touched on. In addition to what was mentioned in the permitting background, there's a cleanup order for impaired water supplies in the North Fork Elk River that has been ongoing since 1998. Okay, moving on to freshwater. Yeah, apologize for the faintness here. Freshwater is also primarily managed for industrial timber and residential up in the upper watersheds, comprised of six main tributaries. And then there is Ryan Creek here, which enters the bay just upstream of the confluence of freshwater. Yeah. We're going to note here that HRC is the only timberland owner in freshwater that has a waste discharge requirement, and that's because the Green Diamond's land holdings here in Ryan Creek enter freshwater downstream of the peak flow compliance point of Howard Heights up in here. And that's the nuisance reach, the nuisance flooding reach. And this plays into when we get into a bit more of the permit. So here's a summary of the freshwater creek orders. As you will hear, Green Diamond is currently under development of an ownership WDR, and while there currently isn't a waste discharge permit for freshwater on Green Diamond properties because Ryan Creek is part of the TMDL, any management measures that may come out of that analysis will later be incorporated into their WDR. Okay, now getting back to the existing WDRs. Next, thank you. The goals of the existing WDRs were to provide an interim permitting strategy to address cumulative watershed impacts while a recovery strategy is developed via the TMDL. These permits were based on establishing effluent limits on changes in peak flow from canopy removal, which influenced the frequency of overbank flooding events, and sediment discharges from harvest-related landslides, which were found to be the largest sediment source in the Elk River watershed. Further, the Regional Water Board found that the conditions in Elk River and freshwater warranted controls on the rate and scale of timber operations, which was the first time in the state that the board took a watershed approach to permitting timber operations. Collectively, the waste discharge requirements established effluent limits and acreage limitations on timber harvesting based on effluent limits with landslide-related sediment discharges and peak flows. Enrollment for each THP under the WDRs is a mechanism we use to permit each THP. And ultimately, this resulted in a Tier 1 and Tier 2 categories of harvest acres, and I'll explain that in a bit more detail. The WDRs provide sediment reduction via erosion control plans within THP units, and everything else associated with the implementation of a timber harvest plan, such as specific management measures like canopy, retention, buffer width, soil stabilization. The WDRs rely on the forest practice rules and the landowner's habitat conservation plan. However, with the revise of the WDRs and the TMDL implementation, we anticipate that specific management measures will be identified as permit provisions. Okay. Tier 1 is not a term within the WDR language, but has become the term to describe the original acreage limitations associated with the effluent limits calculated using the empirical landslide and peak flow models. There's some complex calculations, and probably this is not the place to get into any of that, but these are the limitations.
Excuse me, that's a yearly limitation?
These are annual limitations, yes. And there's a low and high hazard. It's a combination that has a mathematical relationship for that. It's not like there's 144 low and 38 high. It's a relationship between those because the landslide model found that high hazard acres were more susceptible to landsliding. And additionally, the landslide model did not find that silviculture was a factor in landsliding, so an acre is an acre, no matter what you do to it, essentially, under that. Whereas the peak flow model incorporates canopy removal associated with the different silvicultural treatments, and enrollments are evaluated as clear-cut equivalency. Since there was no peak flow compliance point in the South Fork Elk River, no peak flow limit has been set. So as you can see from here, there's fairly substantial differences in the potentially allowable harvest acres depending on the model. Therefore, a secondary tier of allowable harvest acres was ultimately developed subsequent to the WDR adoption, but based on discussions amongst the board during the consideration hearing. During the hearing, the board discussed the concept of allowing the acreage, that is the difference between the landslide and the peak flow models, to be harvested provided zero sediment discharges are occurring and that the landowner could provide an enforceable monitoring plan that was acceptable to the EO to prove no sediment discharges are occurring. Through a collaborative process with regional board and PALCO staff and other interested parties, the Tier 2 zero harvest-related landslide methodology was developed. However, some Elk River, this acceptance of this has not been universal, and some Elk River residents have petitioned the WDR, and we'll hear more about that later. What resulted is the Tier 2 allows for additional harvest acreage above the landslide model up to the peak flow limits. Okay. So these are the acreages that have been enrolled to date under two different time frames. This is 2006 to 2008 and 2009 to 2011. And the bottom number here is an annual average. And what we can see here is a difference in management styles from the first period of implementing this WDR and the second. And this has to do with the reflection of the change of silviculture. I'll get to that in just a moment.
Joel, can I ask you, does the enrollment, though, equal, if I look at this, does it roughly equal a rate of cut out here? Because it's enrolled doesn't mean you have to cut it, right?
So no, you can't roll over acres on an annual basis. So what you get enrolled each year is what you get.
It expires.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. When the numbers are adjusted to reflect the clear-cut equivalency, the total harvest acres appear to be within the permit limitations. move on now to the cleanup orders. The cleanup orders serve to complement the WDRs to treat existing sediment sources. We call them controllable sediment discharge sources. For the purposes of this presentation, I'll call them sediment sites. These include a variety of sites such as undersized or failing stream crossings or road fill that has the potential to discharge sediment. It's a lot of what Jim Burke was talking about in his presentation. And at the time those sediment CAOs were issued, PALCO was treating sediment sources primarily associated with timber harvesting activities. And the regional board recognized that in order to strive for attainment of impaired beneficial uses, an approach that targets the treatment of sediment, even in the absence of timber harvesting activities based on watershed needs, was necessary. We can move on from that. It also provides provides a monitoring reporting program to assess the implementation and effectiveness of the variety of treatments being conducted under the cleanup orders. The components of the CAOs are very much congruent with the non-point source policy of identification, prioritization, and sediment site treatment. In 1998, PALCO had conducted sediment source inventories across much of the Elk River and freshwater watersheds, primarily along their road systems. We knew that there were some areas that hadn't been inventoried, and those areas have been inventories on those areas is being conducted under the cleanup orders. The cleanup orders require the development and implementation of a sediment reduction plan that prioritizes site treatment based on the watershed needs and gives a special consideration for proximity to sensitive receptors such as domestic water supplies and fisheries habitat. The prioritization scheme was worked on in a collaborative effort between PALCO, regional board staff, and members of the HCP agencies, and it resulted in a ranking system of all sediment sources. We're getting to the punchline here, too. Based on this ranking system and the prioritization scheme, PALCO did a source analysis and found that if they treated 80% of the top 100 ranked sites within 5 years, that they could make a significant reduction in the potentially dischargeable sediment in a feasible time frame. And it was recognized that in order to treat those sites, a lot of lower priority sites would be treated also. And they've been implementing that on an annual basis, and HRC finished that 5-year master treatment schedule off. So there's still more components to the CAOs. The monitoring reporting is fairly extensive. It contains implementation audits, photo monitoring, wet weather inspections, discharge notifications, void erosion estimates, which track post-treatment erosion from a subset of sites, has monthly status reports, quarterly and annual summary reports. These are a bunch of numbers. These numbers here represents the number of sites in each of the sub-basins that was identified in the 1998 inventories that needed to be treated as of 2006. This is the volume of sediment that those sites represented. And at the end of the first phase of the master treatment schedule, these are the numbers of sites in total that have been treated and the total threatened volume that has been removed from the system. Roughly in Elk River, it's about 70% of the sites and 70% of the volume. In freshwater, it's about 50% of the sites and 60% of the volume. This slide just summarizes progression and compliance with the master treatment schedule. They're pretty much on target here. And there's not much left to be treated that's high priority. That's the punchline of this. But it is worth noting that these cleanup orders, while they targeted a lot of material pending to be discharged, it did not address in-stream deposits. And particularly in locations where there are the biggest sediment-related problems in the middle reach of Elk River, where there's impaired water supplies, flooding, coho habitat. Green Diamond WDR components are comparable to the combined WDR CAOs that HRC is operating under. Their harvesting is limited to an annual average of 79 acres, which was consistent with the results of the empirical landslide model that was run on data from their land holdings in the South Fork. THPs are enrolled, inventories are conducted, ECPs are written and implemented, and there's a program to ensure that areas outside of THPs are also being worked on. It also has monitoring reporting programs that are very similar to what HRC is doing, minus the nuisance flooding reports. And here's a summary of Green Diamond's activities. They've treated 152 sediment sites, representing 26,000 cubic yards of sediment, threatened dischargeable sediment, and they have harvested 340 acres, which is just slightly under the 79-acre annual average reported to us due to market conditions. Thanks,
Heidi. The advantages of the close.
I'm sorry. Yeah. No hiding that one. Okay, well, getting back to Humboldt Redwood Company, in addition to the need to revise the WDRs and cleanup orders due to the pending TMDLs, HRC is implementing a different management approach from when the WDRs were first developed. There has been a change in silviculture from clear cutting to a selection style harvesting, and they are working on a development of 5-year management blocks to co-locate their timber operations, their road upgrades, and sediment source treatments. Simultaneously, even though the management approach has changed, the regional water board staff are getting regular and consistent input from concerned residents to not enroll THPs. We acknowledge these concerns, and we recognize the cumulative watershed effects assessment needs improvement. During our review of recent THPs, we went on record with CAL FIRE stating concerns impacts to downstream resources and that the cumulative watershed effects assessment needs improvement. There are also continued concerns with the Tier 2 MRP and have been asked to revoke that monitoring reporting program with particular concern that there is no potential limit to Tier 2 acres in the South Fork Elk River. And there are also concerns regarding the concept of the management blocks and co-locating, you know, concentrating impacts. We are taking these concerns seriously, and while we continue to enroll THPs, we are doing so by setting additional conditions to those enrollments. So what is proposed? Getting back to the beginning concept that I laid out is that the team will be reviewing the existing orders, evaluating what has been completed, what works, what no longer makes sense, where efficiencies can be made, and staff will be proposing to take up the challenge of doing this work in the next year. And we'll be doing this with interested parties, landowners. Neighbors. At this point, I'm going to turn the rest of the discussion over to Adona.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the board. I'm Adona White with the Basin Planning staff working on the Elk River Sediment TMDL development. And I've been asked to provide a refined schedule on the Elk River TMDL development, and I hear your concerns stated in a previous item loud and clear about sticking to the schedule that we set forth. So with that, I turn you. We have initiated the peer review process, and in August we'll be sending out a draft technical TMDL and implementation framework for peer review. Then upon receipt of those reviews, we'll revise the draft package and release it for a public comment period and hold a staff workshop in November. We will also hold, and that workshop I anticipate will be in Eureka, where we hold most of our workshops on Elk. We'll hold a regional water board workshop at the December 6th board meeting. And then respond to public comment and revise the draft and come back to the board for consideration in February. And again, we'll be continuing to talk to everyone and work towards agreement on the findings and the recovery approaches. Additionally, we'll be working on coming up with the management measures for the revised permit. And with respect to Freshwater Creek, that's been reassigned to me since Matt Beflavin left the water board. And upon completion of the Elk River technical TMDL, we anticipate 6 months of work on the technical package for freshwater, at which time we plan to pursue basin plan amendments for both watersheds simultaneously and save some work. And with respect to some of the recovery actions and the restoration, as a reminder, there were significant sediment discharges in the late 90s that filled in the middle reach of Elk River, reducing flow and sediment conveyance capacity and resulting in a nuisance flood condition. And because of that reduced conveyance capacity, under current sediment loads, deposition is ongoing. Load reduction measures alone seem to be that they'll be unlikely to result in scour of that middle reach over the next few decades alone, and that some recovery actions are likely necessary to ensure that we can abate those nuisance flood conditions and get back to a functioning ecosystem in that reach. And the recovery actions really need to be based upon a scientific approach, have a high likelihood of success, and avoid unintended consequences. And for example, we want to ensure that as sediment moves from the middle reach, that it doesn't just translate downstream and deposit in the lower reach and cause flooding problems and channel conveyance problems down there. And recently, through a Proposition 50 grant with Redwood Community Action Agency, a pilot modeling effort in a short reach around the confluence, right in the middle reach, evaluated the application of hydrodynamic and sediment transport models using existing data from HRC and Salmon Forever. And the predicted versus measured depositional patterns were compared under recent and reduced sediment concentrations. And the results appear to be reasonable. And there was some scour predicted under significantly reduced sediment loads. That pilot modeling effort indicates that these tools could be applied more broadly to evaluate the trajectory of the system under reduced loads and in combination with some generalized recovery actions like sediment removal and vegetation management, peak flood storage, perhaps downstream. The price tag associated with such a project exceeds the typical funds available through state and federal planning grants, and it doesn't qualify for implementation funding at this point. And so as such, we've identified the cleanup and abatement account as the best avenue for a funding source to conduct these analyses, to really be able to identify and recommend some large-scale implementation actions to get to recovery ultimately. So we'll be pursuing that in the coming weeks, submitting a request for cleanup and abatement account funds to that end. There's broad interest in implementing near-term actions that could help to improve conditions or at least alleviate ongoing deposition in the middle reach. Any projects that are implemented without the benefit of scientifically based approach that I just described should be low risk and considered pilot projects with their performance tracked and to inform the system's approach. Projects that have been identified over the years include opportunistic sediment trapping and removal, certainly on the banks of the river and potentially on the bed. This could simply occur at existing wood accumulation sites where there's good access. And recently, Christy Wrigley and Caltrout and partnering with Humboldt Redwood Company have submitted a proposal to Fish and Game to do such a pilot project on Christie's property. And we're working with all the parties to evaluate design and permitting of these sorts of projects. Projects involving vegetation management have long been identified as a means of improving flow conveyance by reducing roughness elements. And as far as I know, nobody has pursued permitting of this, these types of projects yet. Infrastructure changes to improve access and egress have also been on the table. One such location is Dead Woman's Corner on Elk River Road, which is the compliance point for the peak flow model on North Fork Elk. The idea of potentially raising the road because it's the first place that the flows go over bank and limits people's ability to come and go freely. I've been in communication with Hank Seaman, who's the Director of Environmental Services with Humboldt County, about the site, and he committed to work with county staff and review the location and situation in the context of other county sites and get back to me in the coming month with their assessment and any potential opportunities. And, you know, we'll continue to put forth effort into coordinating amongst the various parties and try to find opportunities that we can help encourage and both in the near term and long term. I think the longer term identifying implementation actions is critical, and as opportunities come up in the short term, we should pounce on them. Lastly, I'll just touch on the public health and safety issues. There does continue to be a serious public health and safety threat due to flooding. Recently, Redwood Community Action Agency developed a Lower Elk River Community Flood Response Plan, and that covers measures landowners can take to be prepared for floodwaters, and they built on local, state, and federal emergency response plans and programs. That said, the Elk River community is quite well-versed at experiencing floodwaters at this point. They understand that the floodwaters rise rapidly and can stay up for many hours to more than a day, and they help each other move vehicles, raise furniture, boat in and out. And I'll close with recovery actions really would be designed to alleviate the nuisance flood conditions by containing the bank full flows. But those are going to take some time. And I know that you have been hearing about this issue for a while, so that's kind of probably a challenge. But the health and safety concerns definitely beg solutions from landowners, CAL FIRE, this board, and other agencies with jurisdiction, both in the near term and long term. with that, we will close our presentation and welcome questions or comments from the board.
Well, thank you, Donna, and thank you as well. So the three legs of the stool, basically, that you put forth in is right there, right? That's your basis from which to go forward. Can I actually go back about six slides? There was, I believe there was an Elk River schedule.
TMDL or other? Spring 2013?
I was going to ask you to fill in and summarize. So you're proposing this essentially on the three legs of the stool. This is the matrix from which to go forward. Team approach is a given because I think it's going to take all hands on deck to make this happen. Mm-hmm. But can you also kind of just in summary walk through this one more time? Adequacy and effectiveness of WDRs and cleanup and abatement orders, and the tier one, tier two, especially as it pertains to the elk. You know, there has been an ongoing dialogue here and a request from this nuisance reach landowners to address this. And as far as the adequacy and the effectiveness monitoring, I heard you say that that 5 year was done, 80% in 5 years was treated and done. What is that adequacy and effectiveness monitoring showed from that 5 year? Did you see that response? Was it shown to be effective? Is it ongoing?
Excuse me, it's Joelle Gepper again. In terms of what we're seeing in the channel, the treatment of those sites, I don't think we've seen a difference in the channel. There's a lot of data that should be analyzed for that. I think what we've learned from the treatment, the site treatment, because they're all upslope, they're on roads, they're in smaller tributaries, there's some large stream crossings, but predominantly we've seen that overall sites have been treated well. However, there are areas where site treatments have not worked well, and there have been some discharges, some large, that we'll be adjusting for some time. And there are ways, there are areas that we could be doing site treatment better, for certain.
Well, by the way, I would be the first to acknowledge the sheer number of sites here, right? I don't think anybody's asking for miracles, but at the same time, it looks like a large number of sites were treated. And that there was also a calculation that a large volume of soil on the order of several hundred thousand yards of cubic yards of soil were essentially captured or held in abeyance so they wouldn't go down channel. Is that effectiveness monitoring showing that to be true? I realize that doing that type of treatment and monitoring or treatment out there is going to be a process that's iterative because you're talking land scale here.
That is definitely one of the areas we need to sit down with all of the information and synthesize into how effective has this been. That process has not been completed.
Okay.
I think what we can say is that the vast majority of sites, there were relatively few problems on, and that material has been successfully removed as a threatened discharge, but there are areas where it has not been effective.
And this is these are watersheds, too, that, I mean, active force harvesting is happening out here. That's what this land is, and that's allowed under the Tier 1, Tier 2 system. And I've actually said before that some of the work that, and in the case of HRC and Bear Creek, some of the stuff they're doing out there is that restorative type logging. So they enter in there, they treat sites as they go, they're conditioned, they do a certain amount of work to facilitate what they're doing, but they also fix some of the stuff that's there and then change practice, right?
Yes, and that's ongoing. In terms of the Tier 1, Tier 2, and Adona could probably speak more to this, I don't think we've seen a reduction in the over bank flows.
Let me ask, too. I mean, is it unrealistic to, in timelines also, to expect, of course, looking at a crystal ball, right? I've got a couple of those that, you know, you look into every once in a while, hope you see it, but it's what's the expectation to stop or to not stop, but to start to see a downward trend in sediment transport from either new or legacy sources that are out here? And legacies, I realize, a rather loose word when we're talking that this stuff happened over a time period that's really relatively recent.
Well, I would just add on to what she said, that a lot of the sites that have been treated under the cleanup and abatement orders are threatened discharge sites. It's perch material out there with the potential to discharge under a large storm event or under once the wood underneath it rots. And so those sites likely have they bleed over time and slowly. And so we may not see the benefit of removing that sediment immediately. Additionally, as from our work in the TMDL and also what HRC is finding in their watershed analysis, I think we're starting to, we're able to shift our focus from these huge, high-priority threatened discharge sites to other sediment sources. And we're seeing that a lot of the channels there's a lot of hydrologically induced sediment where there's soil piping coming in and subsurface erosion going on. We're starting to see a lot of that, and we're starting to try to understand the mechanisms and potential controls. And we're seeing a lot of stored material in tributaries that is going to move through the system slowly. So how do we address that? And I think some of the opportunities of opportunistically trapping and removing sediment, perhaps on the tributaries, those are going to be some of the areas where we can put our efforts and reduce the sediment loads going into the middle reach in combination with doing good practices upslope. So I don't know if we're answering your question,
no, that's
Mr.
Okay.
Noren.
Well, tricky question. Well, at the same time, the Tier 1, Tier 2, mm-hmm. does it give you the tools that you, when you see enrollments come in? Because I looked at a couple enrollments, two enrollments, I believe they were HRC enrollments, a year, year and a half ago that were conditioned. But under the existing orders, say like on the ELK, are they being conditioned? Is there enough leeway with timber staff, and you're part of the timber unit? I believe both you are. And that, you know, you see these enrollments coming. These enrollments have acreage that are associated with them based on a prescriptive number, based on landslide models, Tier 1, Tier 2 permitting. Is the conditions meeting the effective monitoring outcomes that show ongoing sediment? Because what I heard you say, Joel, just a minute ago, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, you really haven't seen changes out there. Are we either expecting things to happen too fast and too soon? Is it just so highly variable out there you don't know, or is the conditions, and I assume that the order revisions, you're talking Tier 1, Tier review revisions by spring 2013, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And to include additional permit provisions reflecting some of the things that have been identified through the TMDL process. In terms of, you know, potential riparian protections or a different approach to looking at landslide controls.
Okay, go ahead.
I have just one other thing to add. Part of, I think, what you're asking is what the analyses we need to do. However, there have been relatively few landslides since this program has been initiated, so
but actually turn that around for a minute, because mm-hmm. I'm not asking you know, about analysis. I think I'm asking on the other side of analysis, mm-hmm. which is this TMDL has been going for a long time, and granted it just has, right? It's
yes.
Okay, it's okay, it's been going. It makes me happy to hear that it's going out to peer review here soon.
Good.
But what I'm asking is on the other side of analysis, how about the action side of analysis? Mm-hmm. What is going on there to make, because we are seeing health and safety issues here.
Yes.
We're talking about raising a road so you can get a car in and out of here in case somebody has a heart attack. So in some ways, what's happening on the effectiveness side, on the implementation side? And that's not only for you to answer. I expect we'll hear from the landowners here in a minute. And that's just a question. That's a big question to me. Like, because we could study this thing forever. It's fascinating. It's a fascinating watershed with history and then looking forward again through that crystal ball about what could happen out here. But we have an ongoing problem here. We do. Everybody.
Well, I believe that, you know, there's the time frame now and ongoing permitting and ongoing enrollments, and are the right conditions being put on THP enrollments? That's one question. There's evaluating the effective compliance with and the effectiveness of the existing orders, and that evaluation is likely to occur this summer. And we can look at that as, are the existing conditions and the existing, is the implementation actually resulting in sediment controls, or does something else need to be happening? And then that can inform potential permit provisions in the revise. So,
those are big questions.
Yes, they are. Okay. Thank you for saying they're big, and I won't feel inadequate for addressing them
no,
now.
No, it's okay. I'll back off the microphone for a minute. And other board member question. Mr. Massey, you moved your microphone again.
I did. Joy, you just said something that perked my ears up, that there have been few landslides. 2011 was a pretty good water year. Have we compared that to arbitrarily someplace in the late 90s to the early 21st century? Just in terms of the numbers of landslides, because I remember touring the Palco stuff, and at that point Frank Reichmuth was pointing out landslides, and I'm wondering if we ever looked at, you know, we had five this year and 50 that year.
The landslides happen when there's a big triggering storm and the ground conditions are, and certainly slope stability is compromised, that we tend to have a lot of landslides. In the late 90s, 95 through 98, there were unprecedented occurrences of hill slope landslides. We have landslide inventories from 2003 as well, because that was a big storm year, and that was incorporated into the WDR provisions, the existing permit provisions. HRC and Green Diamond also looked at landslide occurrence in the years since, and we have received inventories from the 2004 to 2006 time period and then the 2007 to 2010 time period. And based on those, landslide occurrence seems to be fairly low. We're going to be working with HRC in the coming month, I believe, on as they finalize their watershed analysis, revise, and our TMDL source analysis update. And we'll come back to you with kind of more of a story there. But I think there haven't been that many big, big storms to trigger landslides, and ground conditions are better than they were in the late 90s, so we're seeing fewer landslides.
You mentioned opportunistic capture of sediment. My understanding is that you go play with a stream, you get a 401 cert, and that's a little difficult to do. Are we talking about doing something besides that? I mean, or just going and getting a dredge permit?
Well, it depends how it's done. If it's done under a grant program, it could potentially qualify for Fish and Game small habitat restoration permitting and would not be subject to the 401 permitting, 404 permitting, 401 certification. And there's some permitting exploration that needs to occur. HRC has a property-wide 1600. Would any of these activities be covered under that property-wide 1600? If not, maybe we need to go through the normal permitting channels for 1600s, 404s, and maybe it's not that. I mean, I don't believe anybody's tried yet.
Okay.
So we may be going down that.
But essentially what you're saying is trying to look for a way to remove in-stream
sediment. Backing up where there's existing structures, and if there's access, why not remove it instead of letting it flush downstream during the next high flow?
There are, HRC could explain this in more detail because they're on their property, but there are areas where there are log jams where there's sediment accumulating behind them that might have some decent access, and those areas might be, when those log jams move and shift, and they will, that sediment's going to move downstream, and it might be worthwhile to explore how we can move it out before it goes downstream.
And encourage it to settle out so that we can remove it a bit further.
Finally, you mentioned that the cost of this exceeds feasibility studies, et cetera, and you're looking at the cleanup and abatement, and, of course, it got an idea how much we're looking for?
$583,000.
Oh, but...
Does that answer your question?
That answered that question. Thank you.
And just to be clear on that level of request, I mean, that will clearly need to go to the state board for approval and may even require some kind of blessing from you all before we take it to state board.
Yeah, that's
so
some
that's,
serious,
no tri- that's no trivial
cachet
request.
That's serious that's going to have to go through that.
Yes.
Mr. Corbett, did you have some questions?
Yes, my first question, and I just want to take care of some 60,000-foot level stuff. First of all, what's CAL FIRE's approach? Are there any changes? Are they? How are they analyzing the problem? Is it similar to our staff, or do you know at this point in time? Just where is that?
We've met with them and had discussions about the cumulative effects assessment, and I think that they've taken that under consideration.
Yeah, I mean, in one of the recent plans that was requested to recommend not enrolling, we engaged in a conversation with CAL FIRE. We requested that some additional work be done on the cumulative watershed effects analysis, which HRC did. At the end of the day, CAL FIRE approved that plan, and we enrolled the plan. So some additional emphasis has been put into the enrollment process, and given at the end of the day, plans are continuing to get approved by CAL FIRE.
Okay. My second question is, in the past, we have found in this particular watershed that the percent of the watershed being logged in a year does influence the final results regardless of the prescriptions on the ground. So as the tier one, and first of all, if I read it correctly, tier two seems to be increasing, is that staff's impression? But if you verify that, are the acreage for tier two going up or about the same?
The actual harvest acres is increasing primarily due to the type of silviculture, because they are using selection harvesting as opposed to clear cutting. So because that acreage is calculated using the clear cut equivalency.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Tier 1 and Tier 2 clear cut equivalency, what percent of the watershed is that, do you know, being harvested per year? What's the rotation rate?
Donna, looking at these numbers, can you... Elk River is about roughly 21,000 acres.
Well, you could even take it out of this hearing and send us a note or something.
Yeah, I believe that North Fork may, I'd rather crunch the numbers and tell you that precisely. Yeah. Thank you.
And then in your professional opinion, because there can be many causes and many solutions, do you think Tier 2 is consistent with the 20-year watershed recovery goal set by the board in issuing the waste discharge requirement?
Are you referring to the recovery of elevated peak flows?
Yeah.
Yes, that curve was based on canopy removal and acreage, and if they're within the permit provisions, then it should be consistent with that recovery curve that you adopted.
So let me play this back to you. So you could have unlimited Tier 2 cutting and still be consistent. Isn't there some relationship between the quantity cut and the effects in the watershed?
The current Tier 2 harvesting is based on clear cut equivalents that were set forth in the permit provisions.
Right.
It's not unlimited. It's only, there is no peak flow cap in South Fork. That's the only place where there is not an overall limit. And so, but the other three watersheds, or the other North Fork and Freshwater Creek, operating within the peak flow limits should be consistent with the recovery curve that you adopted.
Okay. So you think that's working if everything else was equal? And
based on the predictions from the peak flow model, which seemed to be the best available piece of the best available piece of science for that particular aspect, changes in peak flow following harvesting.
Okay.
Yes.
But I would like to add that is exactly why we are initiating this audit and review of the existing orders, because I'm not sure that staff is ready to answer that question.
Okay. And then just one more 60,000-foot level. We have a habitat conservation plan, and what more do you think is needed and why?
I would suggest that some... evaluating some of the hydrologic changes on a smaller scale. The peak flow model was applied at a 20-square-mile drainage area, and looking at changes in stage at the bottom of the 20-square-mile drainage area. Perhaps looking at peak flow changes on a smaller scale, like 40 to 500-acre scale, and potential sediment discharges associated with that. Making sure that the riparian protections are sufficient for not only not degrading the water courses, but allowing for recovery. Our approaches to managing for landslides, I believe that using landslide hazard mapping techniques, similar to Bear Creek, but more elk specific, are likely to add appropriate protections. We're currently evaluating a suite of those, so stay tuned, John.
Okay.
Okay.
Any other questions, John?
He got his $580,000 number, didn't he?
Miss Heidi Harris.
What was it, 500 and
83.
And how? What's the river stretch that would be able to, the amount of river miles that would be able to, or feet?
That it would go from the top of the depositional reach. Let me show you a map. And I apologize for the faintness in this light. We believe the top of the depositional reach is somewhere around Bridge Creek on North Fork, on South Fork. It's somewhere around Tom's Gulch, and it would necessarily go down to the bay to evaluate a longitudinal profile and see if there's any controls limiting the conveyance. So the total river miles is somewhat to be determined based on where the top of the depositional reach is, because that's going to come from surveys contained within the study. This is 12 miles, I would say probably 19 river miles.
Okay. Thank you.
Pretty good calculation on the fly there.
Okay. Don't ask me to do it again.
Any other board member questions? Okay. We'll probably have you back in a minute. I have a speaker card for Humble Redwood Company, Mr. Tom Schultz, Mike Miles, and John Wassner. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chairman Noren, board members and staff. My name is Tom Schultz. I'm the Forest Operations Manager for Humboldt Redwood Company, located in Scotia, California. I'm speaking to you today in regards to both Elk River and Freshwater Creek. Humboldt Redwood Company is committed to preparing and submitting a report of waste discharge that addresses the current water quality issues of both drainages. We intend to share information, seek broad stakeholder input and support, as we have with our other recent harvest planning, management certification activities. We are committed to working with your staff, adjacent landowners, and other agencies towards the implementation of in-stream restoration projects. Projects identified for both HRC lands and lands of other downstream residents and landowners. With me today is Mike Miles, our Watershed Sciences Manager. He will address our ongoing monitoring efforts and plans to develop the report of waste discharge.
Greetings, Chair, members of the board. My name is Mike Miles. I'm with Humboldt Redwood Company. I've recently been asked to fill the rather large shoes of Kate Sullivan, who was the predecessor to this position. And so I have a hydrology staff. They provide the hard science, and I manage them and attempt to do analysis and bring my forestry background into that and see where can we meld these two things to get a good strategy for sediment reduction and sediment prevention. So I wanted to just bring you up to date with our watershed analysis revisitation. That is something I'm quite familiar with, having done 4 watershed analyses in the southern half of the property, and now we're entering our revisitation phase, where we go back and visit each one of our 8 watersheds and see how things trended over the last 5 to 10 years. In this case, about 10 years have passed since we finished the Elk River watershed analysis. And I also want to talk about the development of the report of waste discharge just slightly, where we're at there, and we're working on that as well. So the watershed analysis revisit is active. We're looking again at the hill slope processes, landslide rates, road condition, erosion off of these roads, surface erosion out of harvest units, soil creep, and some other natural processes on the hill slope. We take a look at the riparian condition relative to shade and then stream temperature and ability to produce wood that's effective in the channel. And then we look at in-stream conditions. And in Elk River and Freshwater as well, we have a lot of in-stream monitoring. We have exactly 7 aquatic trans monitoring stations in Elk River. We do habitat typing. They're approximately 1,000 feet in length. They're stationed throughout the watershed, but primarily down low in response reaches. We look at habitat typing, pools, ripples, that sort of thing. We do cross sections so we can measure aggradation or exportation of soil so we can see whether we're grading or transporting. We're looking at the substrate conditions. How are the gravels? Is there good gravel for fish there? What are the trends there? And certainly we again look at temperature, and temperature has not been an issue in Elk River or freshwater. So. And then in addition to that, we have eight hydrology monitoring stations where we measure discharge, turbidity, and suspended sediment concentrations. And so we can see what's going past each of these stations relative to the activities that have been happening upslope of those stations. The purpose of this obviously is to inform our foresters, our resource managers about the effects of their practices on water quality and aquatic habitat, and particularly relative to sediment, wood, and temperature, and if there are any needs for adaptive management. For example, if we found an increase in landslides, we would be taking a very strong look at what should we be doing differently to manage for that. And then in addition, I'm hoping to move from a monitor-heavy to an in-stream implementation-heavy, kind of consistent with what Adona was saying there. Let's get some more fish restoration projects going, as well as in concert with this idea of trapping and removing sediment. And there does appear to be some opportunities where the road happens to be right next to some depositional reaches where we could physically dig this dirt out. There's permitting issues, as you brought forth. There's risk involved when you start disturbing right in the middle of a stream. Mm-hmm. But we're going to take a close look at that, in part because the preliminary findings, I hope to be back here in a couple of months with the key findings from the watershed analysis, as well as our reported waste discharge management plan. But the preliminary findings show that the landslide rates have gone down significantly from what brought us here in the first place 10 years ago. So that's a good finding. So we believe we have a pretty good strategy that's been effective to date as far as controlling landslides and knowing where to harvest and where not to harvest. So that's kind of where we're at. We have several consultants working with us along with the hydrology staff that's working on the watershed analysis. I think we'll have a pretty good sediment source budget together by the end of this month. We've been working collaboratively with Adona White and other members of your staff, and they've been sharing their TMDL information. We've been sharing our watershed analysis information. I'm very pleased and happy with the relationship. So we'll have some information to help inform the TMDL as well, and I think we talked about a timeline. Adona and I spoke about that, and it works. So you guys will get information around mid-July, and we'll be able to use some information that goes into our final watershed analysis report. I guess I would touch on one of the questions just to beat you to the punch, perhaps. And we have seen this downfall in landslides. We've seen a slight downward trend in suspended sediment moving past our hydrology stations. Despite that, we're seeing aggradation in the nuisance reach. So we're seeing it at the bottom of our property. We're seeing it on Christie's property. And it certainly says to me, let's look downstream at where this system may be plugged up and see if we can work on the drain there.
Can I stop you there for a minute?
Yes.
But wouldn't you look upstream and say, well, hold on, what about my source? I mean, are you saying that your effectiveness monitoring is showing aggradation is still happening, correct? Yeah. In that reach. So what's it telling you upstream?
So what I'm seeing is despite reduction in sediment delivery from the hill slopes to the stream channel, we're still seeing aggradation. Where is the remaining sediment coming from upstream or off of our property? Interestingly, we sent out to do a small stream site landslide bank erosion assessment because the TMDL said, hey, there looks like there's a big number there.
I remember that.
To get more information about
that. Yeah, I remember that.
And so we collaboratively went together and said, we'll go up and look up a lot of these channels. They found, this SHN has been conducting this study, and found that you don't have a bank erosion or a small stream site landslide problem per se. What you have is a stored sediment in your channel. There's subterranean erosion going on. So when I'm walking down this channel, I have to watch out or else I'm going to fall into a sinkhole, and there's some erosion that's happening there. There's going to be some discussion, and there's going to be and this will be tied in part to legacy effects, but there's going to be discussion about, does this exist in old growth forests as well? And those of us that have hiked around old growth forests, we see this sort of thing on occasion. But the extent to which this is metering out and the extent to which it can be controlled, whether it's by trapping and moving dirt in opportune locations like we talked about, that's going to be a question that we need to explore there. So think that that seemed to answer your question about what.
Well, you and Mike, is it right that you're a guy that came from the you're a forestry guy that's now managing the technical end, which I think is fantastic because you bring your forestry application. And I, by the way, I'm not so familiar with how you guys are organized structurally, but just, you know, hearing what you say, what does that tell you, though, about forest practice out there? What have you done with that?
Yeah.
And I'm just curious. I mean, you're coming up on a permit, so you're trying to inform a permitting process, but you're also informed on you've got a bunch of enrollments that are teed up.
No, I'm comfortable, personally comfortable with the Habitat Conservation Plan protection measures. I think that it's preventing sediment from entering the streams off of our harvest operations. We invite people to come out and see, can you find any landslides? Can you find surface erosion? Please drive our road system. We're stormproofing that road system. And Kate Sullivan did some very good work, which we'll reference, regarding sediment surface erosion from a stormproofed road versus a non-stormproofed road. And then we've also done landslide inventories of rates from stormproofed versus non-stormproofed. So as we continue to stormproof, we're going to see benefits from that. But if you're asking me, what do I think about the forestry practices that we have? And you know, I think that they're strong, and I think that they work. And so that's why, in my mind, for the benefit of the community, we need to continue to look at that for adaptive management where we can find some. But I think we need to get down into the nuisance reach and see what can we do there on that part. That would be, and that's something that HRC is committed to help do that, to help kind of resolve this issue, and that I think that's going to go a long ways to addressing flooding. And there may be opportunities such as we found in Jacoby Creek, or Mark Andre was mentioning to me, of side channels that are good for fish and also address flooding and nuisance issues. We want to explore what other folks have tried as well to see if that might apply well here.
Ms. Harris.
I wish Jeff was here because he's the geologist, but I'm just wondering to myself if you guys are going in and doing some restoration work and we're still seeing things happen, it just in my mind would say that, you know, even though the Band-Aid's been placed on the wound or the stitches have been applied, there's still healing has to take place. And so even though a lot of things are being fixed, it's still going to kind of bleed for a little while until some of the older stuff settles all the way out. And then once the new seed essentially begins to grow, which is, a better management of those resources. So we're still reaping some of what happened in the past, and we're waiting to begin to reap what's happening now. Is that what you're seeing, some of this?
Yes. I mean, I think there's three elements that we're seeing. One is, and this I think is relatively minor, but we need to question rate of restoration activity. As you saw, we did a lot of restoration. A lot of that was some large decommissions. And you moved a lot of dirt out and you got it out of the channel, but there's always adjustment. And if you happen to time these things and there's a large storm event or a big winter after that, you're going to see some delivery from your restoration. And so we have to ask the question, is this system ready for that continued rate of restoration? Now, we've done most of the big things, so we're walking ourselves down, but we need to look at that. I think that our company needs to look at that, and water quality, we need to look at that together. The linkage between our harvesting and the amount of sediment and the nuisance that's going on, that's where we try to get at that with the sediment source budget. And so, depending upon what we report there, but the trends that we're seeing right now are a significant downward trends compared to what was going on in through 2000. And so as far as this idea, the storage sediment, that could be 1,000 years. I mean, I don't know the rate at which that's going to meter out, but I think it's going to take there's going to be some metering that's going to go on for quite some time, and you may have an elevated rate above a pristine old-growth forest. Now, given a pristine old-growth forest could burn up, and you could have an elevated rate there in the future, too. I mean, there's disturbance and that sort of thing. So, okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
We have one more presentation by.
Well, I just haven't finished mine.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he was still going.
I was still going strong.
He was talking. Okay.
So that's watershed analysis revisit. Hope to have that done here within a couple months and report back. We've also begun working on a report of waste discharge, and that keep turning that page, and that is uses the Bear Creek ROWD as the template, which this board approved approximately a year ago, and we're currently operating under.
Right.
and it's been very, we've enjoyed operating under it. It's been, it's an efficient, excellent permitting process. We're doing restoration work there, in-channel as well as, by in-channel, I mean actual fish habitat restoration work that we work with Fish and Game, NOAA Fisheries, your staff. As well as we finished, we had four sites to do. If you may recall, we had four big sites to do when we applied to get the order established. We did those sites last year. They turned out fabulous. I think they turned out fabulous, but and very little adjustment. That's what I mean, very little adjustment after the fact, and pleasing to the eye as well. But so we're using freshwater and elk. We're going to use the Bear Creek for the Elk River ROWD. It has a sediment and prevention strategy. It establishes an allowable harvest. We hope to establish an allowable harvest that's a little bit, I won't say more predictable, but that's a little bit easier to get into at the beginning of the year than our current permitting process. That's a big part of what's driving this for us. The Tier 1, Tier 2 approach is, there's a lot of paper handing back and forth between us and your staff that really, if we're going to cut the same number of acres and we're going to use the same strategies, we can probably do that more efficiently. I would note that Tier 1, Tier 2, the current approach, considering the Tier 1 estimated there was going to be this a significant, there's a certain amount of landsliding that would happen under a Tier 1. That amount of landsliding has not materialized. So I think it's fairly safe that having the Tier 2, we're not going over the top of what the Tier 1 allowed for as far as landsliding goes. That's an interesting point. And then the key part here is that this, the new WWDR will hopefully merge some parts of the CAO with parts of the existing WDR. We're certainly looking to close out on the cleanup and abatement order as soon as possible. I'll end that we're looking forward to presenting here in a couple months both the report of waste discharge and the watershed analysis, and that's what I have.
Tell him to make
thank
it.
Thank
you, Tom. What do you say, take?
He's just making a joke okay. About you guys being on time.
Okay, that's right. Well, we have a similar success rate to your staff. But, so, I always say 2 weeks. That's what I tell them. You know, 2 more weeks. We'll get there in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Mike. We have John Westner. John Westner is the area forest manager for the Elk River and freshwater areas. And he's going to go ahead and discuss one of the in-stream restoration projects that we intend to do, and he's also probably the person that would answer any questions regarding harvest planning or on-the-ground restoration activities, what worked and what didn't work.
Good afternoon. I'll briefly touch on some of the restoration, and then I'll get into some of the changes we're looking at in harvesting. Adona mentioned the one pilot project. We're working with the Water Board staff and Christie and Department of Fish and Game and National Marine Fisheries and Cal Trout looking at removing, I think the number is around 4,000 yards on an upper bank on Christie's property. What we're currently doing is Cal Trout is proposing a grant to do the design of the project. And once that is complete, our cost share will come into a second grant to do the actual work. In the last time I was out in the woods with your staff, Mark Alpert and Adona and Mike, we looked at Bridge Creek. This is that opportunistic removal of sediment. Bridge Creek just so happens right below our bridge on Bridge Creek, there is a large wood jam. And a lot of sediment has been trapped not only in the channel but on the outer banks. So that is an opportunity for us to go into the outer bank. One, we can to the banks, which may limit the amount of permits we need, or even go into the channel. So I have approached Fish and Game. They're not real sure on their permitting process. They know that our programmatic permit won't allow that. Some of the other road restoration, Mike briefly touched about the rate of road restoration. That really pertains to decommissioning. In our recent five-year revision of our five-year plan for the CAO, we termed the treatment schedule, not a treatment schedule, but a treatment and assessment schedule. And one of the keys about assessing is how stable the site is, what kind of adjustment you may have from decommissioning that site or working on that site, and is that in a location where the downstream reach is can receive that? So we can either call it, try to call it a no treat or defer treatment into a future time. We have learned, in the past few years, there's been rapid rate of road decommissioning, and we have learned lessons. The larger the decommissioning, the more likely you're going to have problems. We also have tried a few novel approaches. A few sites, the old Humboldt's, we've decided not to remove the wood, where we just scraped the dirt off, covered in with rock, and made it into a ford, and that seems very effective. Our upgrading, our culverted crossings and such, it seemed pretty effective. If we're making into a permanent crossing, those seems pretty effective. Other things that we're trying, we're using much more the standard approach, the standard industry approach throughout the state, the PWA approach. Pull back 2-to-1. Get a straight line. Remove all wood. That's the standard approach for decommissioning. And it may work well when you're within the Franciscan geology, but when you get out of the Franciscan geology and you're in the Wildcat and what we have in Elk River, it may not work so well. It's very less predictable. That geology naturally has a lot of wood in it, so removing the wood is kind of counterintuitive to what the natural condition is. So we are putting more slash, more wood back in these decommissionings. In terms of harvest planning, originally I had whole blocks of sub drainages proposed for harvest in any given 5-year period. That was one to reduce our road use in a certain area and be out of that whole area in a given period. After discussions with the water board staff and listening to concerns, we've kind of divided it up more into partial areas where we'll log on a ridge that divides a watershed, then move on, skip a couple ridges. So we're still in the phases of planning that. We're still in the phases of inventorying the property, but hopefully we'll have a new plan here shortly. Any other questions? If I could answer some questions if you have any.
No questions from the remaining people here. So, by the way, thank you. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I see you guys as part of the solution out here. A lot of what you're doing, by the way, is trying to take care of a problem while trying to also harvest timber, which you're allowed to do under our existing permitting. I'm interested as you prepare your report of waste discharge, as Mike was talking about, as that data comes in and that information comes in and what you're finding, I'd be very interested, and I assume you come in front of us again, and maybe that's a question for staff about what timing, what that looks like as that gets revised. I think that's an interesting point to also look. I'd like to see the assessment part of things because, again, the three sides of the stool between the TMDL permitting and restoration, it kind of gets to a lot of those pieces and parts. I would say, too, that myself personally, I'm interested in the doing part of this thing, and you guys are on that front end, and so I think that's important. I think it's also important to use that adaptive management part of things, so depending on what you're finding based on aggregation, based on landslide models, or based on just the reality out there, how you personally harvest wood out here is really important to inform this decision-making process on our side. You're a company that's out here to harvest wood. I understand that. You own a lot of property, and you, my understanding, in buying that property, you bought the legacy problems here. Some of the problems and having to deal with those, I realize, is difficult. The time frames are very compressed, though, because we've got a nuisance problem here that is actually nuisance to me is a misname. It's far beyond a nuisance. It's a reality out here, and it floods, and it's a symptom of a larger problem. And I'm interested in how we get to the larger problem. I think you guys are doing that in a big way. I think it's also very important to look in the rearview mirror when you have assessment, the ability to assess, and the ability then to have the foresight from looking in that mirror to what are you going to do next. So I very much appreciate you guys coming here.
Thanks
very much. Gary Ryerson is up next.
He's up
Gary Rehnson.
Mr. Chairman, board members, Gary Rehnson, Green Diamond Resource Company, and thank you for the opportunity. Green Diamond received our WDR in South Fork Elk, which is McLeod Creek primarily. That area is about 1,900 acres, and we are below the nuisance reach where that confluence comes in, so we were never subject, or as Sedona pointed out, not subject to the peak flow limitations. So a couple things I want to discuss just very, very briefly. We worked very closely with staff in the development of this WDR. It was developed over probably less than a year. It developed very quickly. We had great cooperation with staff. We sat down and said, what are the issues? We recognize, as John's pointed out, there's some unique geologic paramaterials out there. The Wildcat series has some challenges, and you have to recognize those. One of the methodologies we recognize is the less soil you disturb, the less soil you have to manage in that kind of a paramaterial. That's very, very poorly consolidated paramaterial. That's very fine soils. So one of the things that in 2006 we received our WDR. We worked closely with it in that time, also with the DONA, knowing that we were also dealing with the TMDL drainage, and TMDL was coming. So we tried to address as many of the TMDL issues as we could in the development of that WDR. Subsequent to that, in 2007, we received our final and approved aquatic habitat conservation plan. So a lot of those measures that were in the aquatic plan, we'd already applied to South Fork Elk. That ramped it up even higher, though. Subsequent to that, in 2008, we received a consistency determination from a fish and game for coho. As part of that, we reviewed some additional issues that they wanted to address, so we actually ramped up a little higher, and especially in that kind of geology, which included provisions for additional Class 3 protection. So there are kind of three different tiers that we've dealt with in that drainage since 2006. It has consistently provided additional protection measures to. Also, our harvesting in that area, while it's a very gentle nuance, but when we originally set up the 2006 WDR, we offered those acreage per year limitations to ourselves, so we were really never subject to any of the phase ones or phase twos. We said, this is what we'd like to harvest per year. We said, that's acceptable, and we've gone forward since then. The other issue is when we ground harvest, we use two methods in that area, ground harvesting and cable harvesting. The ground methods we use do not involve tractors. They involve, when we harvest, we use shovel harvesting, which means we pick, because we do even age, we have openings where we can put the machines out into the large swing machines that can go out, pick the material up without dragging any of the logs or building any skid trails, and bring them back next to the road so we can harvest them. And that results in a minimum amount of soil disturbance. And that's in that area, I think it's very, very useful. Just a couple of quick little nuances in the clarifications, really. We were never subject to a clamp and abatement. Our WDR was totally separate, and I know you didn't suggest that. I just want to clarify that slide that was on there, that those were all old PALCO orders that came in well before we received our WDR. We were never subject to a clean up and abatement order. Also, in the Freshwater Creek drainage, actually our property in the Ryan Creek drainage, while it's not subject to the WDRs, limitations such as freshwater and elk, of course it is, and we've actually tried to clarify this, whether or not it was really meant to be in the TMDL or not. It is. It's in the federal boundary, so it is included in the TMDL. But it is subject to our roads WDR. So it is it is covered by our property-wide roads WDR, but it's not subject to the other provisions that are then included in the general WDRs when we obtain timber harvesting plans in the Ram Creek drainage. And you'll hear more about that later as we move forward to looking forward to a property-wide WDR that addresses the other issues beyond the roads. So that's really all I have. Thanks.
Any questions for Gary?
How would you rate the effectiveness of the roads program in your watershed permit?
On our program?
Yeah.
Well, we believe it's very
effective. Because it's been in effect for a little while.
Right, it has. We do a lot of post-harvest treatment. We go out, we mulch all the crossings. We have very, very rigid standards. We have no winter operations in that drainage whatsoever. we're very, very specific. And keep in mind, it's 1,900 acres, so it's,
yeah.
While you know, it's certainly part of our property, it's not, we don't have a mainline road that runs through it that controls other parts of the property. So we're able to treat it differently than other parts of our property in that way. So we agreed to provisions out there because of those unique soil types that aren't applied elsewhere on the property. And we recognize some of those needs. We look forward to continuing to work with staff as we move forward on the development of the TMDL.
Any other questions for Gary?
Thanks.
Great. We'll talk again in a minute. Thank you. Okay, I have Scott Keel, followed by Norm Pasteris. Great. Thank you.
Chairman, board members, thanks a lot for giving us this opportunity to express our concerns. My name is Scott Keel. I live on property at the north and the south fork of Elk River border. Lived there for 22 years, my family and I. And I've seen a lot of changes over the last 22 years, especially in recent times. I have fond memories of my son and I taking a canoe from the bridge. By the way, I border Dead Woman's Curve, so a lot of the silt and stuff accumulates on my property. But I have fond memories of my boy and I taking from the bridge from my canoe all the way down to the end of the property. We used to have a trail that was on the border of the river. We used to walk all the time. My son used to camp down there. That's impossible now. It's impossible. Now, several times a year, probably three times this year, we've either had to walk a mile around on private property to get home. We've had to take a boat. We've had to wade through the water up to our waist. Sometimes we couldn't get home. Sometimes we couldn't leave home. It's a nuisance. I can go on and on about the effects of the siltation and the flooding it's had on our lives. When the cleanup and abatement order was issued, I thought things were going to get better. When the watershed waste discharge permitting took place, I thought that was going to get better. It hasn't. It's gotten worse every year. It takes less rain to flood. You're talking about raising the road. That's only going to put the water on my property. The bridge will have to be raised 4 feet because it goes under 3 feet. The bridge is the highest point right in that area. Mm-hmm. The bridge will have to come up 3 feet. The others will come up 8 feet. It's ridiculous that that's what we're considering, and we're not going after the source. And the source is logging on the hillsides, clear-cutting, logging in the winter. It's time to let this watershed heal for a little bit. If you disturb the ground, the silt's going to go downstream. So I've been to scores of meetings with neighbors and agencies and Jew people. I've written you letters. I've written you emails. I've talked to you in person. Like I said, meetings for the last 15 years. Nothing has gotten better. When is it going to get better? I know we're a pain in your backside, and we're always here complaining about things, but we have to be because it's our lives. I'd like you to put yourself in our situation to know 3 times a year you won't be going home, and you don't know when it's going to be, and or you might not get out of your home because of the flooding. I just don't think for a profit that we should suffer. We should suffer with the community. I'm traveling here to Willow Creek, giving up a day just to talk to you again and ask you to get serious about the restoration and go to the source and try and let's see what we can do about stopping the siltation and the flooding. If I could put a glass of the water and let it settle, I'd have about an inch of silt in that glass when the flooding occurs. When the water recedes, I've got an inch of silt on the roadway that gets tracked into my house, into my garage, my bearings on my wheels. My cars are affected. I have to have the front end bearings changed. So I just wish you would, after 15, 16 years, that you'd listen to us and know that we have a problem, and let's do something. Let's get it better. So that's all I got to say.
Hey, Scott. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. I appreciate it. Any questions for Scott, by the way? Okay. Thank you, Scott. Mr. Norm Pasteris, followed by Jesse Noel.
My name's Norm Pasteris. I've lived on Elk River for about 42 years now, and I've been out there since I've been a kid. And I just, it's not getting better. It's flooding more. You see the banks of the river caving in all the time. It's, you know, we've got to do something different. We're trying stuff, and it, they say it gets better, but I don't see it. My neighbors don't see it. My water isn't getting better. Like he was saying, you can put a glass of water out there, even going through all these new filters and everything that they put in. And during the winter, with me, it's worse because they log all winter. It rains. My roof gets a little bit wet. All the dust flies on my roof, sticks there, and then the next rain, it ends up in my water tank. It's worse now than what it was 5 years ago. And the guys here, Mike, I think it is. Well, I see these water sheds here. They go in, they build them, they cut pressure-treated wood, they throw it in the river, they throw it on the ground there, it washes down the river. They come in every year, they take their tubing and all that down, they take the ties, they cut them, they throw them on the ground, that's in the river again. They talk a big thing, but I don't see no action. Now, that's what I've got to say. Any questions?
Any questions? No. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Jesse Noel, and I have one more speaker card after that from Christy Wrigley.
Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Jesse Noel, and I live on the South Fork of Elk River. Some new faces, but I remember Bill Massey and John Corbett from way back, and the WDR experiment and all the experiments that have been conducted by the Water Board in an attempt to see if something would work to control the sediment or to abate it. And what we're faced with here is that 20 years after Andy Baker sounded the alarm bell, the problem continues to grow in size. That's astounding to me, given the nature of your duties as board members. I would like to formally and verbally petition you regarding your action or inactions to where you have avoided enforcing the prohibition on discharge of settleable solids in amounts that causes aggradation or results in nuisance. And I would like an understanding, the rational basis for that, an explanation of whether you're waiving that section of the basin plan in order to privilege timber harvest that you know is threatening our lives, destroying our homes, our water supply, and the value of our property. Furthermore, it's been 4 years and the Water Board has not dealt with my family's complaints regarding the cow pathogens, the cattle that are defecating into our sole source of water. And so formally request by petition your rational basis for not enforcing the Health and Safety Code, California's Health and Safety Code 116990, 116995 and 117005.
Mr. Chair, this is so senior your counsel.
Go for it.
This is a public comment on a workshop item, and I will submit to you, Mr. Noel, that if you want to formally file a petition, that you need to submit it in writing with your code sections and everything else. It should be in writing so that we can review it.
Okay. I've already submitted this in writing in the past, and it hasn't been addressed.
So. It has been. I mean, it's been responded. Okay, so wait a minute. So if it's the same as a petition that you previously filed and that's been responded to, whether you think that was adequate or not, that would be important to know, because otherwise my ears perk up and I go, a petition? And I want to know if there's a new issue, because we do take petitions seriously. And so if it is a new issue, I would ask that you submit it in writing so that we can analyze it and go through the normal process that a petition goes through.
These are ongoing issues that have not been addressed. And I don't think that there's any excuse for, after 20 years of, you know, increasing the sedimentation and flooding and destruction of water supplies, that it be excused, because it's an ongoing issue in contrast to a new issue. But if I have no alternative, and if it's your position that people who can't write or don't write cannot verbally submit a petition, I'll take note of that.
I'm sorry, again, are you suggesting that you have some sort of disability so that you cannot write? Okay. Are you asking the board to take a formal recognition of an oral petition? I mean, I don't like, you're using big words here, and so let's be very clear what you're doing, because this is the appropriate time to make a public comment on this workshop item. And so if you have other business, I suggest that we schedule it and so that it's properly received and that we're properly prepared for it. Right now, what we are doing is properly taking public comment on this workshop item. So if you have intentions other than a public comment, maybe we can talk offline or, you know, get to the bottom of it, because I don't, you're sort of making some threatening stuff and asking the board, well, if you agree, you're sort of asking, you know, kind of like interrogating the board, and that's not appropriate. So
fine, I'll begin papering you. The zero sediment delivery under Tier 2, David, you weren't on the board at that point in time. Heidi, I believe you were. That zero sediment delivery has not been followed. The waterborne inspectors have not taken zero as the definition of a landslide. I mean, anything above zero in mass wasting where there is subsidence and delivery to a stream is not the definition that has been applied. And this is very unfortunate, because if it is small landslides that are contributing, we need to know the time and place of those deposits in order to understand how the sediment is transported in time and space down to the nuisance, you know, the stream reaches where there's a nuisance condition. It was dismaying to me earlier this year to find out that that definition had not been followed, because we went over and over that, getting that agreement in 2006 that anything larger than one cubic yard would be considered. And if there was even a single occurrence, that Tier 2 would stop. Now, that clearly has not been the case, and I feel very deceived by that change-up. The WDR contains no factor of safety. A factor of safety is necessary to enforce the basin plan prohibitions. And, I mean, it's clear that the WDR has not been effective. There is a big question as to why. which information apparently was not gathered to answer. And I say that it hasn't been effective. Salmon Forever has repeatedly surveyed cross-sections that were originally put in 2001 and 2002. And at that time, there was a moratorium on harvest approval in place. And between 2002 and 2003, the cross-sections document that scouring of the river bed was occurring in some cross-sections. Since that time, the deposition of the bed and banks has increased, and I believe we submitted a DVD with all of that information, the data on it, and the analysis of that data. And I think that's particularly relevant to the basin plan prohibition on discharge of sediment in amounts deleterious or that results in aggradation. That is ongoing. And the effect of your policy and your plan, your long-term plan, is that our property is being occupied by a neighbor's waste. And our health and safety is being threatened. Our the value of our property is being diminished. And what we hear is that, we must privilege this landowner to continue the business. Rather than, we're a nation of laws, we have Constitution, Article 10, Section 2, that makes water for domestic use the priority in the state. And if you remember your history, how that came about when the hydraulic mining was going on, and still the regulators couldn't be trusted to control that discharge. And so finally the people rose up and put it in the form of an initiative, I believe, to make certain that that was there. We're asking you for respect, and we're also asking you for the rational basis of these decisions that we are calling actions or inactions, to not enforce these basin plan or health and safety code standards. A couple of other things we've seen in the monitoring. We have these stations that are TTS stations. They're a little bit different than what Pacific Lumber HRC has maintained. And I can go into the difference between a turbidity threshold sampling system, if you like, and
in the interest of time, let's not do that.
Okay. But what's very interesting is that you can plot the turbidity spike against the flow, so the stream discharge, and against rainfall. And what that does is it gives you a picture, a graphic picture of any rainstorm event that you want, as to whether the turbidity spike was leading the increase in flow. And this is important because it might tell you whether the sediment source is very close to the drainage system. Or it could be, you know, other causes that are creating causing the turbidity spike to lead the flow spike. But what it does tell us is that the driver of bed scour, which is flow, is not always, or even maybe perhaps most of the time, the source of the sediments. And it makes you wonder whether the deposits that are in the bed channel are actually sediments that dropped out on the falling limb of the previous storm that, you know, covered that portion of the channel bed or banks. What I'm trying to say here is that we know that raindrop splash on disturbed surfaces with the fine sediments that make up the soil and road material in Elk River are put into suspension when the raindrop hits them. And to the extent that that sediment is not easily dropped out, it would be conveyed downstream towards the nuisance flood ridges. Now, interesting, the conversion from clear cutting to selection has increased the amount of acreage that is being harvested. And we also, in the timber harvest plans, you can see that sometimes selection is applied to a forest that may have 600 basal feet of area per acre, and that it's reduced in the plan to 100 or 125 or even 75 feet of basal area, which, given that the factor of clear-cut equivalence for selection is 0.5, you can see that there could be a flaw in the old WDR that is making it unreliable when it comes to sediment that is entrained in the flow by raindrop splash and overland, you know, gully erosion or other processes. So I encourage you to investigate that, as the sediments that Scott Keel spoke of and that are covering and burying my property are these fine sediments, ranging from, you know, clays and silt to very fine sand. They're not what you would expect from, you know, the deeper stratas of a landslide, where you might get some, you know, rock in the in. So I'm hoping that you will.
In the interest of time, can I ask you to finish?
Pardon me?
In the interest of time, I don't mean to cut you short. It's just that we're getting towards 5 o'clock and I'm looking at 4 other agenda items. I'm interested in what you have to say, really. But I just would ask you to summarize.
Okay, I'm about through.
Finish up.
Unless you have questions.
Very well, good.
I think it's unfortunate that members of the public get less time and less consideration than the discharger who has harmed us. And I think also that it's clear now that we deserve a constitutional level of consideration. We know that one engineer has estimated the costs of remediating the foundations and the septic systems and the bridges and the properties at $39 million in Elk River. And that's an exceptionally large number to be given such short shift by the Water Board. If your property and your family were threatened to that extent, I would hope you would be outraged and would ask, like we are, for enforcement of those basin plan standards. And until that conveyance is recovered, there needs to be an alternative. We need some kind of financial remedy to from you, and I hope that you will use your cleanup and abatement authority and will charge the landowner who created the mess for all of the costs and not just shove it onto the taxpayer. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Christy Wrigley.
I'll try to keep it short and to the point. I'm Christy Wrigley of Elk River. I'm sure many of you know me all too well. It's been a pleasure meeting some of you, however. All right. The residents of longstanding know the effects of upstream logging to the so-called nuisance reach where we live better than anyone else. Those are people like Norm and Scott and I, and unfortunately Ralph Carlos could not be here. It's based on decades of observation. Some of those observations are as follows. Elk River recovered from the 1960s through the mid-1980s. Slow at first, but more rapid toward the end. Elk River soils are soft and unstable. Logging in the 1987 to 1997 destroyed that recovery that we had just watched and degraded the river even further with huge deposits of fine sediment and clay soil burying gravels and the big pools we'd known. Toward the end of the moratorium on new plans, 97 to 2001, we saw improvement in river conditions with gravel 1 to 2 inches returning on my property. As soon as the new plans were approved and worked on, the gravel was buried and the fine sediment returned. Deposition of fine sediment continues through the present. Large slides contributed to the original deposition of sediment in the nuisance reach. Today, with my observations on the North Fork, it is more from total area logged on, not just total clear-cut acres, but total area logged on. It is the acres of disturbed soil with reduced canopy cover and increased roads. You can't really good log your way out of the condition that we have. HRC is now going back and re-entering, sometimes for the third time in 25 years, areas that were logged on which caused the initial onslaught of sedimentation in the first place. These are the only trees left, giving the downstream residents any real protection in the upper watershed. They're visible in the handouts, but I'd ask you in the interest of time to just follow me through on this. And our observations show that it takes about 15 years to get an effective canopy cover with redwoods in Elk River. The North Fork has a cap of about 266 clear-cut acres. Tier 2 logging can morph that into nearly 500 acres of logged over area. And to answer your question a little bit, to give you a perspective, John, 500 acres equals nearly 4% of the watershed above my farm.
Okay. Thank you.
That's just a rough kind of give you. That's the residents are now in year 7 of a failed WDR. We all know it's failing. We've told you, we've showed you, and we've submitted the scientific paper that proves it. We continue to experience ever-worsening conditions of flooding, property damage, and safety risks. Whether it is sediment from new logging or from logging in the previous 25 years or before that, it all contributes to deposition on the residents' property. And HRC owns over 90% of the North Fork watershed. And unfortunately, they are responsible. They bought it. They didn't inherit it. They bought it. And I think they do treat it seriously. But we have nowhere else to go. The basin plan prohibits salable solids in amounts that cause nuisance or adversely affect the beneficial uses of water. Yet that is exactly what is happening to myself and my neighbors. It has been happening continuously since 97. We want to work with our upstream neighbor, HRC, as equals to find a real working solution to the continuing sediment deposition on our property. No company should be allowed to base their business plan on the continued destruction of downstream property owners. That is just plain wrong and un-American. We appreciate their better logging practices and recent willingness to work on small projects in the watershed. We welcome that, and I look forward, hopefully, to being to working with them on that. Reducing the cut property-wide is not enough because the pressure remains in Elk River and freshwater because that's where their trees are. Long-term reduction cut in these watersheds is needed, and canopy retention above 300 square feet basal area are what is required to get recovery. These are my experiences. The yo-yoing between 75 to 150 and a 15-year reentry period are a formula that will maintain the problem for the downstream landowners. It's, you know, we were there. We watched the recovery. In that early recovery, they logged maybe 75 to 150 acres a year, and there was no clear-cutting going on. Things that need to be done: pause all logging until the TMDL is done and the nuisance flooding returns to the pre-1985 level. Stop or pause Tier 2 logging. Until a true assessment of its effects can be calculated and the sediment deposition on downstream properties is stopped. Do not reduce canopy cover so severely. Leave 75% of what is there now in each cut block. Extend the reentry period to a minimum of 30 years. Our geology cannot stand the kind of activity that it is exposed to. We have been patient too long, and we really believe that we want to make this system work. We will do anything and everything we possibly can, but the truth can't be ignored. The truth that we know. We not only want to work hand in hand, we want to work shoulder to shoulder with them. We want our understandings to surface. And somebody asked a question about CAL FIRE, and I can tell you from working with CAL FIRE over the years, their cumulative effects module is absolutely non-existent, totally ineffective, especially when it comes to off-site cumulative effects. They never, unless we absolutely go up there and practically hit them over the head with a pound of silt or two, to get them to come and see what is happening to us. They don't take any of that into consideration. The fact that my farm's destroyed, that I can't live in one of my homes, that my property is ever more being buried. There's something wrong here, and it's not wrong with the residents. So we need to make all the good intentions that everybody has a reality for the residents on the ground. So thank you very much. I would welcome questions. And if we can't do them now, please do call on us. I'm open at any time for any calls from anybody from the board.
Christy, quick question. There was mentioned that there's a project on your property that you're working with HRC on. Yeah. Can you quickly describe that and what that entails?
It's where their property joins mine on the upper east end where the river defines my property, and there is a flood terrace area there that we are planning to take some of the dirt out to allow the river to expand over to a certain kind of natural area where it drops down, put the dirt on the upper terrace, which is, and hopefully this whole area is where we had an orchard and now cannot. I'm hoping that this will allow the river larger area to expand to without going all the way across my property and inundating the orchard, and allow me and hopefully maybe get some space to put some trees in. Because that's part of the problem with us, is noticed by that fence post that some of you have seen. That was an area where the river, that secondary channel, as I call it, when it first comes out of its banks. It used to fill that in. Now that's filled in with dirt, and so it runs all the way across my orchard. So it adjoins their property. We have hopefully a possibility to accomplish something and find out if it really does work. And is it an area where sediment will collect and we may be able to remove it? I know that's never, people don't like that idea, but I'd help remove it. So that's where it is.
Absolutely.
Hi, Christy.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Hanging in there.
Good as can be.
I was just, you often speak of the, you know, your lifelong experiences living
yes.
on the river. And I was just wondering, in thought of listening to everyone's concerns and kind of understanding through the years some of the things that are going on, from a historical perspective, do you recall, are you the second, you live on the land that your father had, is that correct?
I'm third.
You're third, so it was your grandparents.
They were in the valley in 1885, and they bought the ranch in 1903.
Okay, so that's quite a while.
Yeah.
I love heritage properties, by
Aww.
The way. So I just wonder, do you recall any historical dredging events on the river historically? You know, I mean, I know in the olden days when something got plugged, you just got your equipment and you went out there and did it. There wasn't this permit process that we experience now. So I'm just wondering, in old photographs and anything that you know from the past, was there some active removal maybe of sediment historically in this drainage on the where it goes flat?
Okay, I have a better knowledge on the North Fork than I do the South Fork.
Okay.
Okay, on the North Fork, I would say no. We have never been as damaged as severely as that 87 to 97. There was always the ability to work around it. I'm not saying that the logging of the 40s and 50s didn't truly affect us. It did. That's why the 55 flood was such a devastating one. I would have to do some more research, not only in my own mind, but in the Historical Society, because the South Fork was where Falk was, and they had a dam there that had a fish ladder on the side, mm-hmm. and I know that they would open it up, and there was both plus and minus to that. Down in the lower watershed, they disliked it because it inundated sediment, but in the upper watershed, it cleaned out a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
but I don't know exactly of any arena where they went in and took it out. Historically.
All right.
I know about the Grassy Creek project
yeah.
along 299 where they have, but that's not Elk River.
Right. All right. I was just wondering. I know that when you
yeah.
flip through old story, you know, your old family photos and stuff, oftentimes you realize that maintenance was done, and I'm not suggesting
well,
that that's and, not the,
and,
that, that's
and
the problem.
And there was maintenance done, but by the county at the North Fork Bridge. And
okay.
right now, you... Gosh, if you stand underneath that bridge, I would say the stacks of sediment are 6 to 8 feet high, and we used to run around that,
uh-huh.
and later kids in the 70s ran around it too. So now that's totally blocked. I mean, not totally, but I mean, it's their area is severely reduced.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Christy, thank you for providing us information. You've been consistent in always providing us information, and thank you for that. Appreciate it very much. We will be talking again in the future.
Thank you.
You bet. Adona and Joel, can I ask you to come back up, please? Can I ask you, do you have any responses or additional information you'd like to provide at this time?
I have a quick note regarding a comment that I believe John and Mike made about the rate of sediment site treatment. That has come up as a concern. I would like to offer that we have had relatively few discharge notifications associated with site treatment compared to number of sites treated. One of the tasks that I want to do as part of this evaluation is to look at all the discharge notifications and quantify the volumes associated with those and then cross-reference also with the subset that have had void erosion estimates so that we can start putting a sediment cost per se on doing these treatments. I would also like to offer that rate would be a real issue if the engineering design and implementation is not being done properly. That's where
explain that rate of
Site treatment would be more of a concern if we are not fully designing and implementing site treatments the best we can. So if we're doing them poorly, then yes, it would be a problem. And I would offer that we've had relatively few discharge notifications associated with the site treatments relative to the numbers that are being treated. So I'm not sure how much of an issue rate is. And would also like to offer that the push for a quick rate is kind of over. The vast majority of the sites have been treated, and they're going to be slower now, regardless of what happened previous. So I really wanted to clarify. I think there's a lot to be pursued in the future.
I have just a couple small points.
Please.
You know, I think it's difficult to assess the effectiveness of how well the landslide model's doing and the acreage limitations associated with that, given the lack of triggering events. And it's just one of the things that is difficult. It's been 5 years. The landslide model found that there was a 15-year period where landslides were elevated following harvesting. So it's something we need to reckon with, is the time frames of the truth serum of the rain versus where we're at in the permit, just for context. I also wanted to address the issue that I believe Jesse brought up, Mr. Noel, about the canopy removal coefficient associated with selection. He was saying that perhaps the 0.5, which is essentially 50% of the canopy being removed under selection, that under the existing, like how harvesting is being implemented under HRC's management style, perhaps another coefficient is more appropriate, is kind of what I took from that comment. And I believe that working with HRC and looking, trying to come up with a good estimate of what that canopy removal coefficient should be, then could be incorporated into the peak flow model. So we could look at that. And I
Excuse me. It's okay.
Lastly, I wanted to add that the pilot project on Christie's Orchard is within the reach that was modeled under a pilot modeling. And so it's one of those places that we can assess how well it performs and learn from it. So, yes, that's the end of my comments.
Mr. Corbett.
We spent considerable length of time in the administrative hearing record on one making clear it wasn't net zero discharge, but it was zero discharge. And I think it would be pay to go back and get that precise definition and compare that to the Tier 2 results, because, like I said, considerable amount of time was spent to avoid some of the same questions we're getting today, and I think that would bear follow-up.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, so I understand then that there are several tracks that are moving, including the HRC has WDR revisions, reported waste discharge coming in, which will trigger then at least a look and possible likely revisions to the existing permitting program for timber harvest activities, correct? You're going out to TMDL peer review, and that thing starts to go. That there was also HRC is going through some assessment process as well that is in, they've treated 80% in 5 years, have been treated, and the cumulative watershed effect assessment is happening and will inform this as well. As far as the restoration goes, there was mention about some of the shorter, medium, and long-term restoration opportunities here. I don't quite understand what the $583,000 potentially does here, but I'll just make a statement that I again, am interested as a board member on how we get to doing some big things out here. The accusation by Mr. Noel, actually, I reject as far as I do not place anybody over anybody else here. I wasn't here when this TM or when this problem was identified, but I have been working on this thing for about a year, seriously trying to figure out what to do here as well. I would like to see some serious movement on going forward on any and all fronts that we can. I do appreciate the work by the landowners out here, all landowners, by the way. I'm very heartened to have actually landowners that are severely affected by nuisance reaches, but yet still basically stand, I believe, shoulder to shoulder was the term, and I appreciate that, Christy Wrigley. At the same time, I sincerely appreciate HRC, and I see you guys as being very much a part of the solution out here. I'm interested to what those solutions are. I think that the part of feasibility study is an important part to inform longer-term things, but what do we do in the short and medium term here? Because the nuisance reaches far beyond nuisance at this point, and I'm very interested to know what we do here and how we get to really, really meaningful work here, whether that's revision of permitting or how we affect these three legs of the stool. And I expect, by the way, can I ask, when do you come back in front of us again? When does this issue come again? Am I correct that it's December?
We're not currently scheduled. We don't currently have a time. I think we need to work with HRC. Well, there's two different components. With regard to the TMDL,
December.
Adona, it is December. So with regard to the TMDL technical like analysis, we'll be coming back in December. With regard to this, to the review, revise of the Elk River WDRs and cleanup and abatement orders, we don't have a proposal at this time.
You
and
have
that's
to get
going
a
to be based on discussions. It's going to be based in part on the information that we're getting out of the technical TMDL analysis, but then also in conversations with HRC and the timing that they're ready to submit their report.
The report
waste
research. Mr. John Clark.
This is just a comment to the newer board members. We're entering an adjudicatory permit process, and that means it's inappropriate to have any conclusions at all prior to the public hearing, and that we need to be far more careful in our language than we were in this informational session going forward.
Do we not? Okay. Excuse me? Yeah. Okay. With that, thank you very much. It's late in the day. We're going to take a 10-minute break. We'll be back 5:25.